Thank you. Have a surprise for you this morning. I'm not sure it's such a good surprise, but the bad part is Lance is sick. The worst part is I'm preaching. So anyway, that will start the new year off this way, and hope it goes well. You can please pray for me. Lance was going to begin a series with the book of James. As you probably know, James brings all those nice, warm, and fuzzy spiritual ideas down to earth for us. And it's not so warm and fuzzy. In fact, it's a little tough. And James is a little tough with us because he tells us how he wants us to act. And I think it's a blessing that it's there for all of us to read and understand. Today, I took this moment to, and I'll take one section of the book of James to talk about, as it says there, faith without works is dead. To me, this topic was always complicated, because on one side it says, for faith, we don't want you doing works. And on the other side, James is saying, do works. So I'll try and decompress that, and I hope make it understandable. After my message, Jaime is also an elder here at Union Church, together with Brad and Lance and myself. I do want to say thank you, Jaime, because I didn't realize till 5:30 last night that we were doing communion, and so I didn't want to bite that one off as well. So I phoned my friend Jaime at 5:30. I said, would you please help me? And of course, he always helps. He's a blessing to me and to all of us at Union Church. So in advance, thank you very much, Jaime. Okay, so as Lance says, we'll get to work. It's a bit of work that I prepared for all of us today. And after that, we'll have communion. Okay, so if you would, to begin with, if you go to Ephesians, and go to Ephesians chapter 2, and we'll do verses 1 through 5. The way I prepared this is to read a little bit, talk about it, get you into it, and then read some more. So anyway, in Ephesians, Paul says, before I begin, it's just in Ephesians he talks about what it is to come to faith and the importance that God has in our coming to faith rather than ourselves doing works. And you remember at that time, with the Pharisees were in control of Jerusalem, and everything was works. And so it was so important to clarify that coming to faith isn't works that we do, but rather it's what God does for us. And then we'll go into James, where it turns around, and we can see what we have to do. So I'll begin in Ephesians 2, verse 1. It says, in the past, you were spiritually dead because of your disobedience and your sins. At that time, you followed the world's evil way. In other words, before coming to Christ, we were following the world. We were in the world and we were of the world. And we acted, most of us, in very worldly ways, interested mostly in ourselves and getting things for ourselves. But God, or Paul says here, that's how you used to act in your evil ways. In fact, you obeyed the ruler of the spiritual powers in space, the spirit who now controls the people who disobey God. And who is the spirit? The spiritual powers who are in space. None other than Satan himself. In other words, rather than following God, we were, maybe without knowing it, playing along to Satan's game. but actually, in verse 3 says, actually, all of us were like them and lived according to our natural desires, doing whatever suited the wishes of our bodies and minds. In other words, everyone did exactly what he wanted to do. Not what God wanted him to do, but what he wanted to do. And it says, in our natural condition, we, like everyone else, were destined to suffer God's anger. In other words, at the end of the day, when Jesus comes again, or if we die before, and when our life ends, we have to go and stand before the throne of God, we would be judged. We will be judged. And that judgment was probably not going to be a lot of fun. But then he goes on in verse 4. But God's mercy is so abundant, and his love for us is so great, that while we were spiritually dead in our disobedience, he brought us to life with Christ. So what did God do? Here we are, we're people on earth that he created. Just imagine, God creates the world, and he creates the whole universe. And so what's out there? It's just a bunch of planets, a bunch of rocks, some suns, some stars, but there's nothing alive. And so then he creates us. And he creates us. Why did he create us? Why did he create us? He created us for his own joy, for his enjoyment. He wanted to have some live beings, people that he could interact with, be with, and of course, who would be thankful and loving and following his every desire and obey. It says, he brought us to life with Christ. So what does God do? The first thing he does, or after creating us, and after we fell from our creation, is that he sends his only Son, Jesus Christ, to the world to come, to leave his place with God in heaven, to come down to earth, to take the form of a man, being God. He took our form to live and walk on this earth, and eventually to die, and to die a horrible death on the cross. So God does this, and if we can, all of us who have children can think, well, how many of us would send our children to die for somebody? And I hope none of us would. Okay, maybe we should, but so anyway, God does this for us, and Christ accepts this. Christ accepts to go along with God. Gracias, René. Sorry, I was getting dry for some odd reason. God does this for us. He sends his Son, Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ also, he had a place in heaven next to God. But it says in Philippians, he did not hold on to that place. He didn't hold on to that position, but he comes to earth to die for us. Then it goes on to say, it is by God's grace that we have been saved. So here we are, we're living worldly lives, and God decides he's going to send his Son so that we can be saved. And he sends his Son to be the to be the Paschal Lamb, the Easter Lamb, i.e. his sacrifice would be sufficient so that we would then, by believing in him and believing in his sacrifice that he did for us, we too would be saved from our sins. And it says in 8:9, for it is by God's grace that you have been saved through faith. It is not the result of your own efforts, but God's gift, so that no one can boast about it. Okay, and this is very important. It is by God's grace. And what is grace? Grace is the love, the unearned, undeserved love that God has for each one of us. And it is through that love that we can be saved. And it's so important, he says, and it's because of God's grace and love for us, and it's not because of anything we do. And this is so important at this time when you had in the Jewish world at the time that Christ came, and they were all running around trying to comply with the law, and I think they had 300 commandments that they all had to comply with every day, and they were going nuts. But he said, this isn't you doing these works as they are called. Rather than you doing them, it is me, God, who are gracious. I'm graceful to you. I'm loving and merciful for you. And because of that, all you have to do is to believe, to come to faith, and then you will be saved. So, he said, for it is by God's grace that you have been saved through faith. It is not the result of your own efforts, but God's gift to us, so that no one can boast about it. He doesn't want people going around feeling all puffed up because they're good servants of God. You know, he wants them going around, but not all puffed up. And he goes on in verse 10, he says, God has made us what we are, and in our union with Christ Jesus, he has created us for a life of good deeds. And this is the springboard for what James is going to talk about, because it's saying here, God made us. God has made us what we are. He made us believing Christians, people who would follow him. He's made us what we are. And he's made in union with Christ, because it was through Christ's death that we came to faith. He has created us for a life of good works or good deeds, which he has already prepared for us. So those good works that we will do, it's interesting that God has already thought this out. He's thought about us. He wants us to come to faith. And then he wants us to do the good works he has prepared for us to do. So that's kind of an introduction to this idea of faith and works. And so it's very clear that the first step coming to faith is a step of God's grace unto for us. With that, I now go to the book of James. And if you can go to the second chapter. Okay, and we'll begin at verse 14, and then we'll go through this section where we now understand what James wants us to do with the faith that God has given us. Faith and actions in verse 14, it says, my brothers, what good is it for someone to say that he has faith if his actions do not prove it? Can that faith save him? So now James takes it the other way around. He says, fine, your actions didn't get your salvation. They didn't get your faith. However, now that you have faith, I don't want you to just live in your faith happily and do no actions. So now it's turned around. He says, yes, I don't want you just sitting there. I don't want you coming to church on Sunday and the rest of the week you forget about me and forget about what I'm asking you to do. I want you to, one, to come to faith through Christ, but then I want you to act. In 15, he says, suppose there are brothers or sisters who need clothes and don't have enough to eat. What good is there in your saying to them, God bless you, keep warm, eat well, if you don't give them the necessities of life? And this kind of the other side of the Good Samaritan story. You imagine that Jewish rabbi going through Samaria, he's walking along the road, and he finds a guy who's been beaten and held up on his way, and the rabbi goes by, and he steps to the other side of the road and keeps going, whereas the Good Samaritan, those Samaritans, and who in the eyes of the Jewish people were terrible people, he stops, He picks up the man, he puts him on his horse or his donkey, he takes him to town, he puts him in an inn, pays the money to take care of him, says to the innkeeper, take care of him, please. I'll be back in a couple of weeks. If I owe you anything, I'll pay then. Help this man out. But what a difference we see here, in which James says, what if you see a situation like that and you keep on going by? Or you say to the man who's been beaten by the side of the road, God bless you, my good friend, and then keep going. Here we go. So in 17 it says, so it is with faith. If it is alone and includes no actions, then that faith is dead. Okay, it's dead. It's useless. It's not useful to you. It's not useful to God. It's not useful to anybody in the world or to the world. It might as well be dead. He goes on with another couple of examples in James. So we're in 2:18. He said, but someone will say, one person has faith, another actions. And here he's talking back to, I think, probably what Paul said, and I think it was in Corinthians, wherein he says, a church is made up of many people, and different people should do different things. For instance, Lance, not me, should be preaching. Okay? That's the first thing. I should be teaching my Sunday school class. It's exactly where I was meant to be. But he knew that I didn't program a class this week, so he put me to work anyway. So the preacher should preach. Sunday school teachers should teach. People usher. Other people welcome. Welcome at the front door, etc., etc. There's lots of jobs to be done. But it's not. Some of you are the faithful ones. And so I can imagine if there were such a church, the faithful ones, we'd sit back and we'd be faithful. You see? And we go out and say, you guys get to work and do all the work because I'm the faithful one. Well, no. He says, all of you have faith. You all have to have faith, and you all have to do some work. Okay, so he goes on, or he says, but someone will say, one person has faith, another actions. My answer, what does James say to that person? He says, my answer is, show me how anyone can have faith without actions. I will show you my faith by my actions. So he's saying if you have faith and you know nothing about it, maybe you don't have any faith because nobody can see it. Then he says, do you believe that there is only one God? Good. So you can imagine the church and the faithful one is sitting on the side and says, I believe there's a God. And you guys work? No. He says, do you believe there's only one God? Good. Said, even the demons believe and tremble with fear about there being one God. So even Satan believes there are gods. So if your whole reason for being a Christian is, oh, I believe in God, the answer is, oh, well, you and Satan, you both believe. And Satan's works aren't very good, and I hope yours are better. So what he's saying is, yes, you have to believe, but then do something about it. And then he gets a little tough, and he says, you fool, do you want to be shown that faith without actions is useless? Look how our ancestor Abram was put right with God. How did Abraham get on the same page with God? How did Abraham come to believe and to work with God? And he said it was through his actions. When he offered his son Isaac on the altar, you can all probably remember that horrendous situation when God tells Abraham has come to know God, he's followed God's instructions, he's left that very lush land in the Fertile Crescent, which is probably now Iraq, I think. He's gone up to the north and over to the Promised Lands. He's done all this following God. And then God has said, I give you a son. He's been faithful. He gave him a son, But now God says, I want you to sacrifice your son. Tough call. Abraham goes up the mountain. He takes his kid Isaac. He makes Isaac carry the wood. So Isaac goes up and they're born. And then Isaac says, where's the goat or the lamb? Who are we going to sacrifice? And Abraham says, God will provide. He had complete faith, but his faith wasn't just sitting on the side. He had faith, and he was acting. And in fact, when he got up to the mountain, and he puts Isaac on the, on the wood that he'd set, where he was going to first sacrifice him and then burn him, he ties him up, he lies him down. The Bible doesn't say what Isaac said, but he was probably in shock. So anyway, he's there, and Abraham says, God will provide. He has complete faith in God, and God is faithful because, of course, a few minutes later, a lamb or an animal appeared, and so he took him, he undid Isaac, he sacrificed that animal, and then God knew. He knew who Abraham was, and it says, in fact, God considered Abraham his friend. What? Because he was so righteous, he was so correct in believing, and he was also correct in his actions, following up on his faith. And so it says, and so Abraham was called God's friend. You see then that it is by actions that a person is put right with God and not by his faith alone. Then we go to another story, and it's almost as amazing. I'm in James 2:25, and it says, it was the same with the prostitute Rahab. She was put right with God through her actions. You say, whoa, what? What actions? Wait a moment here. So she was put right through her actions. And which actions? By welcoming the Israelite spies and helping them to escape by a different route. So this is a moment, just to put you in context, the tribes of Israel have left Egypt. They've come across the Red Sea. The Lord opened the Red Sea for them to walk across on dry land. The Egyptian army followed them. They got into the dry land of the Red Sea, and the good Lord folded them in, and he killed them all. And so then they went ahead, and they walked around, and there's a long story there, but eventually they go to the Amorites. It was a tribe close by to the people where Rahab was. Rahab was in Jericho, and they conquer the Amorites. And so, Rahab knows this. She knows that these people, and everybody in Jericho, know that these people of Israel are coming. They've come up to the Jordan River. They're about 10 miles away, and they're probably going to come in and try and conquer us. And in fact, they're all in fear and trembling. So these two spies that Joshua sends out to go have a look around the city of Jericho, they go to the house of the prostitute. They go to the brothel. That'd be a normal place. Guys come into a town. They don't want to go anywhere because who would they say they are? Oh, we're spies. No, so they go there and they figure, well, no one will know anything more about us. They get to Rahab, and Rahab receives them. She realizes who they are, and she hides them up on a roof. And when the king finds out that the men have gone there, he sends them to Rahab. And what does Rahab do? She comes down, says, oh, yes, I saw these men. I didn't know they were spies. I don't know where they came from. So I sent them away. And they've gone out the gate. And in fact, if you rush, you can probably catch them up. And so the king's men, they go out. They follow them. The gate is closed. They're on the outside. And Rahab is there. And so now she goes up and she talks to the spies. One second. Okay. And she says, okay, guys, everybody in Jericho is in fear and trembling of you guys coming. We're not scared of you, but we're scared of your God. Because they'd heard, and she had heard, what God did when they came out of Egypt, this crummy little tribe of people, and God destroys the Egyptian army to save these people. They go to the Amorites, and they conquer them. And so Rahab says, everybody in Jericho is in fear and trembling of when you come. So she says, you must promise me one thing. When you guys come in to destroy this city, you will save my parents, my brothers, my sisters. In other words, you'll take care of our household. And they said, okay, you've saved us. Sounds like a good deal. Just put this red cord in the window, so when we come in, we'll tell everybody to leave you alone. And with that, then Rahab goes, she puts them out the window, and they go out the window and down the wall, and they go back to Joshua. Eventually, they will come in and conquer, and everyone in the city of Jericho will be destroyed. They'd be killed, with the exception of Rahab and her family. So what's this tell us about Rahab? Rahab's a prostitute. You think, oof, what kind of a person does that? There are people who end up in prostitution, not because they want to, because they're forced into it. We know Benny Yu, who we work with. He tries to work with the girls down around the Merced to get them out of prostitution, to give them a rope so they can come out of that situation. So this Rahab, she strikes you as being that kind of a person who's doing this, but that's certainly not what she's all about or wants to be doing. And then she hears about this God who is so powerful, but she probably also hears about what kind of a kind and loving God he is. She takes the opportunity, and as far as James is concerned, and what's important to us right now, is she comes to faith. She starts believing in this God, and when the spies come, she doesn't leave it there, but she does something about her faith. She doesn't just leave it as, I have this faith. Says, yes, I have this faith, but what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to help God's people, the people of this mighty God that I've heard about. And so then again it says, it was the same with the prostitute Rahab. She was put right with God through her actions, by welcoming the Israelite spies and helping them to escape by a different road. So then, in 26 it says, so then, as the body without a spirit is dead, i.e., we were spiritually dead to Christ. We were dead in our life. We were just living a life of selfishness, of everything for ourselves. But in the same way that a body is dead without a spirit, also faith without actions is dead. And that's the message of James in this part. And so if we go back and we look at it, we say in Ephesians it says, your actions aren't necessary to get your faith. That's kind of step one. But then we go to step two. Step two is, now you have faith, so what are you going to do about your faith? God is saying, I want actions. I want you doing something about this faith that I have given to you. Okay, so that's the message for today. A beginning, a taste of James. James is a tough guy. He's going to give us all sorts of tough lectures during the next weeks. Lance is going to do the next series on James. And so I guess for the next 4 or 5 weeks, we'll be reading more about James. So if you're like, I kind of want to be that way, the spiritual one who's sitting on the side doing nothing, watch out, because James is going to get a hold of you and saying, faith without actions is dead.